Welcome to The Conscientious Lens, a podcast and video series produced by Anastasia Photo, a documentary photography gallery based in New York City and a division of AG Global Creative Agency. Today, Anastasia Photo photographer William Myers discusses his work and influences with Jonathan Leaf, a New York City playwright, screenwriter, author, and journalist. A virtual exhibition of work by William Myers can be viewed online at www.anastasia-photo.com.
I'm very honored and flattered that I have the opportunity to interview one of the outstanding photographers of the present day, Bill Myers. This is in connection with a solo show that is being presented online by the Anastasia Galleries. Just want to do a very brief introduction. Bill has told me not to do a brief introduction, or at least not a hagiographic one. Bill has had a series of solo shows in recent years, including a major exhibition in Romania, of all places, and recently had a fantastic solo show at the New York Public Library. He's also spoken and written for a wide variety of publications and to a wide variety of audiences about photography. He's written for the Wall Street Journal, many other publications. If I could say a little about the nature of the work, it's wide-ranging. There was a style of photography that came in maybe 15, 20 years ago with people like David LaChapelle that involved digital photography, doing a lot of Photoshop. Bill's style goes back and connects to a great tradition that goes before that. It's photography that's done with film, and it's documentary in nature, though it can range widely in terms of photographic style. And the current show that he's done is, which has been developed over almost 20 years, is music and musicians. So maybe we should just proceed and start asking some questions. Bill, so I've known you a long time. I'm very grateful. This show, in some ways, it's similar to some of the earlier shows you've done, but in some ways, it's very different. But let's go back a little bit. If you could tell people how you first got involved with photography, I think a lot of people would really like to know about that.
Well, like many photographers, I got a camera at a fairly early age, probably before I was 10. Brownie of some sort or borrowed my dad's cameras. And then when I was in my early teens, the family built a house, and I asked my father if he would put in a dark room in the basement while we were under construction, and he did. So I had the experience of being able to develop and process my films very early on. And of course, that's a good way to understand how you get to the final print. It doesn't just happen by accident at the drugstore. I always had a good camera, and I always tried to take interesting and good pictures. But I didn't become professionally involved in photography really until quite late, until I was around 60. So although I started late, I have the mannerisms, as you pointed out in the introduction, of photographers of my age who began their professional work in the 60s and 70s. The photographers that Jane Livingston refers to as the New York School. And I see myself as very much in that tradition.
And this show, now this show is about music and musicians, and you took the pictures all over the city, an incredibly wide range of settings. At weddings, you took pictures of buskers, you took pictures at concert halls, people's homes. It's really extraordinary. Now, you had told me that in some ways it influenced your feelings about musicians, perhaps more than your feelings about music, but could you maybe say a little about either?
One of the events that most influenced my feelings about music took place when I was in the fifth grade at the Henry Bonnet School, Providence, Rhode Island. One day, the music teacher, Miss Rice, came into the classroom and said we weren't going to have our class in that room today. We were going to go into a special room. And we went down the hall to another room. The desks in the room were the type where you have a seat with an arm that functions as the desk. And on the arms were the sort of a sheet that you use for multiple choice questions and earphones. Well, this was back about 1948, and the chance to wear earphones was pretty exciting. I mean, if you were 10 years old anyway. So we put on the earphones. We were instructed that we would hear sounds. There was no Bluetooth, and the earphones were connected by cords with a Victrola at the head of the room. We were told we would hear a series of sounds, and we had to use the sheet we had to check off whether the sounds in any given series were louder or softer, or up went up the scale or down the scale, had certain other characteristics. Anyway, I did the best I could. And a few days later, Miss Rice called me into her room and told me that she'd seen the results of the test. And in the future, would I please, when the class had music lesson, would I please not sing? Because I was so off the charts that I would throw everybody off key. And in fact, as cruel as that sounds, it's true. Well, the few occasions that I've let myself get carried away and sing in a group of people singing, eventually the room goes quiet and I'm the only one still croaking. So I've always had a sense about music as being this sort of realm that I'm excluded from, that I don't have an intimate nature that allows me to participate in it. But I've also had feelings that I like music, and somehow by the time I was in college, I got to have strong feelings about jazz. How I got introduced, I don't know, but the 50s, as I'm sure you're aware, was a great, great era for jazz. And since I lived in Providence, Rhode Island, I was able to, when my dad let me borrow the car, go to Newport and got to see some of the very early Newport Jazz Festivals, which were really fabulous. It was before the era of the sort of mass-marketed music festivals that we have nowadays that are very scripted, not just for the participants, the musicians, but for the audiences. And the jazz festival in that era, especially when they just started, the jazz musicians really got to hear each other in performance, because the good ones were all working. But at Newport, they had a chance to perform for their peers, and they really wanted to shine. I mean, if you were Dizzy Gillespie and Duke Ellington was in the audience, you were going to be good. So among other things, they tended to stay on stage much longer than they'd been told to be on. The performances frequently went to well after midnight, but golly, they were great. And that gave me a sense of what music, when it's really fabulous, what it can be like and what it can do. And that's that stayed with me ever since.
So, but there was also, in the course of doing the show, your feelings about, again, over almost 20 years, it's almost 20 years of Major Photographs. So in the course of doing the show, your feelings about musicians changed some too, is that right?
Right. Well, as it happens, as musically inept as I am, I'm in a family where everybody has musical talent. My wife has always been a singer and is a member of several choruses now, some of which perform in Carnegie Hall. My son had perfect pitch when he was an infant. If anyone sang a lullaby off key, he started crying. My daughter performs her own songs in nightclubs around Manhattan and in Brooklyn. And one of the consequences of that was that my wife, who was on the board of directors of Artec, which is a very wonderful group of people who perform early music and play instruments like the harpsichord, the theremin, the viola da gamba, the cornetto. And I got to know the people in that group quite well. But like all such groups, you know, they impoverished. You don't make a lot of money playing the harpsichord. So when they needed photographs for publicity purposes, they asked, and they knew I was a photographer, they asked me if I would take pictures for them. I started doing that. I thought initially, well, this will be easy because, you know, they stay still when they're performing them. They're not running around and jumping up and down. But in fact, I found it was very difficult because even though their bodies are more or less occupying the same space, their limbs are in constant motion. I mean, if you're playing a violin, you know, your limbs are going back. And more important, their facial expressions are very fluid. Trying to photograph a singer, I found out, is really difficult because you want to get them at some point where it's clear from the still photograph that they're in the process of singing. And so that was a real challenge. I enjoyed it enormously, especially because I usually photographed them at rehearsals where I was able to walk in among the musicians in a way that you wouldn't do if they were performing in front of an audience. So that gave me my taste of photographing musicians. And then, since I had roamed around the city a lot while working on my Outer Boroughs project, I knew there was music all over the city. And as it happens, our family has been fortunate having friendships with many musicians who do other sorts of music. A lot of the people in the so-called klezmer revival have been friends for a long time, and people who sing in other choruses and performers. So I had a familiarity that got me in the door, as it were, to photographing several groups and performers. And after that, I found that most performers are happy to have somebody make a bracket of their performances. So I overcame my initial shyness and ended up, as you said, photographing a wide range of musicians in many different venues, including many who let me come into their home and from practicing.
Did you develop any generalizations about, now you photograph such a range, you have Chinese traditional musicians, you have classical musicians, you have jazz musicians, you have rock musicians, you have mentioned buskers, you have wedding singers. Yeah. Did you develop any generalizations or any feelings about any particular type of musician?
Well, other than the fact that they make music, no. I mean, musicians are as varied a lot as any other large group. The one thing they have in common is their devotion to whatever type of music it is they perform. And about that, needless to say, most of them are very passionate.
So getting back to the subject of your career, you've had, as you mentioned, you started late as a professional photographer. But in a relatively short period of time, you had these major solo exhibitions, a whole series of them, and you've been getting a lot of attention. You've been written about in major publications. You've written for major publications. And I guess part of that is that there's a humanity of the work, but also that there's a lot of technical skill, an enormous amount of technical skill. So maybe we should talk a little about your equipment, your approach technically. I think there are people definitely want to know about this. So now, all the pictures in this show were taken with a 35 millimeter black and white camera. Is that correct?
Right. I have a Leica camera, the MP, which is, as you say, a film camera. And most of the pictures that I've taken, I use the 35 millimeter lens. 35 millimeter lens is just slightly wide angle. The traditional lens that say most photojournalists use would be a 50 millimeter lens, which has a narrower scope. But I like the somewhat broader picture because it helps to establish where the musician is. And that was one of the things I was most interested in, was trying to show the relationship of the musicians to their surroundings and to their audiences. I used the Leica and I used the film partly because a generational thing. As I said, I identify myself with the New York School of Photographers who flourished in the 60s and 70s. But also the Leica, as you may know, it's a very small instrument. It's very inconspicuous. It lets you work without being in people's faces. And I always shoot with natural light. I never use a flash. And that also means that I don't interfere with what's going on. The Leica, as it happens, is a very quiet camera, virtually inaudible if you're more than a few feet away from it. So that also let me photograph without interrupting.
And the speeds are relatively slow, certainly compared to photojournalism, right?
Well, because I was frequently shooting in very bad lighting situations. I mean, you know, people performing in nightclubs and whatnot, there isn't a lot of light. I frequently had to use a very slow shutter speed, typically a 1/60th of a second. And I was able to do that. One of the pictures in the show is the picture of the bride dancing, which was taken at the Boathouse Cafe in Central Park. When I checked the light meter, it required some very long exposure. I think something like a 30th of a second, or maybe even a 15th of a second. And I knew that with people moving as rapidly as they were dancing, it would give me a very blurred image. But, you know, I figured, well, I'll see what happens. And I'm very pleased with the result. Sometimes I like to think the gods of photography are on my side. And that was one of the times.
I don't know if people who are hearing this through, they're going to see it on the Anastasia website, will know that much about you, but you're kind of famous for your ability to make friends and connect people, and been at your apartment in the past where you've had many famous people. For instance, I remember going to a book party you hosted for Andre Aciman, who wrote Out of Egypt and Call Me By Your Name. I know you're good friends, speaking of jazz, with Will Friedwald, one of the foremost, maybe the foremost jazz critic in the United States. You know so many people. And that ability to make people, I know, plays a big role in your ability to get great pictures. I'm reminded, forgive me for dropping a name, of a story, experience I had many years ago meeting now deceased Richard Avedon. And I mentioned to him that a photographer that I had found fascinating but books of his work was Minor White. And he immediately got upset. And he said, I said, you don't really like my way, do you? And he said, well, that's exactly what I was trying to get away from. I wanted to get away from that. Minor White, for people who don't know, was a teacher for many years. Who's NYU, right?
He may have been NYU. There are several good places that you can learn photography in New York City.
Yeah, I think he taught at NYU, but he was incredibly technical. It's incredibly technical photography. And Avedon was saying, you know, I wanted to get absolutely away from that. There is amazing technique in your work, obviously, and I think that's been universally acknowledged. But in a sense, your work in the show shows this. The emphasis is on the people, the humanity, the circumstances. You weren't trying to do stuff like Minor White or Mapplethorpe. Is that an accurate description?
Oh yeah. I mean, to me, the whole purpose of any technique you have is to put it at the service of the subject. And to make them look good, not to be a showboater of some sort and make yourself look good.
How many of these pictures did you know someone that you got in there, and how many of these pictures were there circumstances where you had to, you know, make four phone calls to convince them to let you take the picture, or not really?
Well, it's all over the lot. Some of them are people I've known for a lot of time. Some of them are people out of the bus, because I never did get to know who they are. There are some pictures in the larger portfolio of work for Music New York, not necessarily the ones that are on display now at Anastasia, but there are several of them that come from a concert I went to that Bill Anderson performed at. Anderson lives in the building next door to me, and he lives in a rented apartment he subleases that's on the first floor. And as I was coming down the street towards my apartment in the evening, I would frequently hear this somebody playing a clarinet and occasionally the saxophone. And once in a while, a flute. And it was really good. And at some point, I had to find out who this guy was. But finally, one evening, as I was coming home, and I heard these wonderful music coming from the apartment, I started banging on the window. As I said, he was on the first floor. You could reach the window. And eventually, he opened the window. I mean, he wanted to see who it was bothering his rehearsing. And I had my business card ready to hand to him to let him know I wasn't a vagrant coming to mooch off him. and explained that I was taking pictures of musicians, and I could tell by the way his rehearsals went that he was really good. But he let me at some point come over and photograph him rehearsing. And in fact, he did. And then after that, he invited me to a concert he and his twin brother, who also is a performer, were doing at the Symphony Space, which you probably know is one of the wonderful music venues we have here on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. So I was able to get backstage and photograph what goes on in the dressing room when musicians are getting ready to perform, and then to be able to shoot what was going on stage from the wings. So that was a very exciting moment for me.
It seems like, you know, there are many themes in the show, but one we might want to talk about is the enormous range of religious settings that you photographed in. And obviously music has played such a historic role with every major religion, but you have pictures from, I think, almost every major Christian sect, at temples, both Jewish temples. You have Eastern religions. It's really amazing. So anything you think people should know?
Part of that is that most churches and synagogues, for that matter, have fairly good acoustics. And the city, one of the things I found was the city is just lauded with people dying to perform and willing to perform. They're not going to make any money, but they don't even need a big audience, just to have a few people to sit in front of them and listen to them while they're performing is a great pleasure. And throughout the city, many of these performances take place in places in churches or synagogues. And they do because the synagogues and the churches will let them play either for free, I imagine, in some cases. But at any rate, it's much less expensive than hiring a venue like Symphony Space or Roulette in Brooklyn. As a matter of fact, just to extend that, the music that gets performed all over the city in bars and in people's living rooms on street corners, just fabulous.
Are there any particular influences you want to mention?
Well, there is a tradition of the visual representation of music. I mean, you can probably, without scratching your head too hard, think of lots of famous paintings of people playing the lute at one time, or the sackbut, or these other historical instruments. And in photography also, there's been a tradition of photographing musicians, and some photographers whose reputations are entirely built on their pictures of musicians, like Herman Leonard. And Lee Friedlander, early in his career, had a contract with one of the major recording companies to shoot pictures for the covers of their albums. There are people who became famous shooting rock and roll musicians or country musicians. But the person whose work I think most impressed me was Roy DiCarava. DiCarava was personally friendly with many of the great jazz musicians of the mid-century, and was able to photograph them in their apartments, usually in Harlem. DiCarava himself was Black, and so he had access to that community. He tried to capture the spirit of the music. As a matter of fact, his major book on of photographs of musicians is called The Sounds I Saw. So it's a very apt title for the way he photographed them. And in fact, that became my mantra from the time when I was photographing the musicians in our tech, the early music group. I started realizing that what I wanted to do was to shoot the music, not the musicians, to shoot the music, to have a photograph that somehow was emblematic, representative of what I was hearing. And I was very flattered when on several occasions of people who I photographed when they saw the pictures I'd taken, and they'd said, oh, you can hear the music. I thought that was a high compliment.
You've talked a little already about your aesthetic philosophy, the desire to use technique to tell the story, to reveal the subject rather than for its own sake. Are there other things you want to mention in terms of, you know, your larger gestalt or philosophy?
I know, I just read a book about the conflict between Ludwig Wittgenstein and Karl Popper. So philosophy is something I know I'm not in that league. So I have no philosophy to tell.
What? I didn't mean in the sense of Wittgenstein or Popper, but in the sense of your aesthetic, your approach, your underlying theory.
I'll tell you what my aesthetic is. I have it posted here. It's a quote from Vicki Goldberg, who some of the people are watching this will remember as the really terrific photo critic for the New York Times, way back when the New York Times had good artistic critics, and then later for Vanity Fair. She was a wonderful writer. And this is from a review of work by Josef Koudelka, the great Czech photographer. And she says, styles are not entirely easy to come by, but a clever photographer can find one without really twisting his soul for it. A vision is more difficult and more rare. Style depends on surface components, such as composition and contrast, on aesthetics, on a constant eye, sometimes on gimmicks. Vision probably draws as much from life as from the eye, from the heart as well as from the brain, from the complexities of personality more than from ingenuity or mastery of craft. And that's my philosophy. I'm with Vicki. I've had a life in which I played many different roles. I was a military intelligence officer. I worked on for the U.S. Senate on at the Capitol. I was in business. I was an investor. I did many, many things. And when I photograph, I try to bring what I've learned from all these things to my work. And to show things, I like to have the pictures be simple, but the point of the picture to be complex. And that's frequently the way it works.
Are there any pictures you want to particularly talk about, especially any that might be up on the Anastasia website?
Well, you know, one of the things I found that's very interesting, and I'm sure people in many different arts find this, you have your own personal favorite, and you think everybody is going to respond to that with the same fervor that you do. And then you're very surprised that people like some other work more than the ones that are your favorites. So I take lots of pictures, and I only allow a very small number of them to get into a portfolio as we have, as I've done here. So I only would let in a picture that I want my name attached to. And I'm fortunate that Dolly Mayron has worked as an editor with me on weeding out the pictures. So at the end of the day, I like them all. I have some that I guess I like more than others. But, you know, you wouldn't tell your children that you're the one I like the most. Wouldn't be good.
Were there any techniques you used for loosening up the subjects before you photographed them? Because I've heard so many stories about things that photographers do to try and get people to relax or to be themselves. Were there any particular things that you do or that you did in this series?
Well, that's actually a good question. I know, because I've read similar reports from photographers, but particularly portrait photographers who feel the necessity to establish a personal relationship with their subjects before they can begin photographing. But in a way that hasn't been as critical for this body of work, because in many cases the subjects are performing, so they're already in a sense having a relationship with the audience. I'm just there in a way functioning as a representative of that audience. When it's been in a very small group and there hasn't been a formal audience, I let the musicians know that my camera is not going to have a flash that'll go off in their face, that it won't make any noise, and that I'll stay out of their way. And that's usually what they want.
So thank you. I'm flattered that you asked me, and I think that, you know, the show is incredible.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.